Welcome to Season 8, Episode 3 of RPG Circus, the greatest show in gaming. In this episode, we discuss software and other resources to help you with your virtual tabletop sessions. And we also talk about Dread. Again, welcome to Season 8, Episode 3 of RPG Circus. My name, of course, is Jeff, and joining me this week is Tristan and Jim, too. Welcome.
Good to be here.
Unfortunately, we have one little minor announcement. Jimto's only going to be with us a couple more episodes, and then, unfortunately, some additional work that he has to have done will eat up his time, and he will no longer be with us. I'm sorry to hear that, but... That does mean for the folks out there that, hey, if you might want to do an episode or two, let me know and we'll see what we can do.
Yeah, I'd much rather be here, quite honestly.
Well, you know, that's always the way that works. I'd rather be fishing. I'd rather be doing any number of other things than actual work. You know, it's like the old saying. It's like, I'm sick. What do you mean you're sick? Yeah, I'm sick of work. You know, that kind of thing. So... Mm-hmm. But sorry to hear that, but that does, like I tell people, the silver lining is that does allow an opportunity for other people to come in and just honestly give new opinions, new life. That's one thing I do love about doing with the show is, you know, hearing other people talk because, well, while I can talk a long time, and I have done at least one solo episode by myself, it's just not the same without people.
Mm-hmm. No.
So, all right, shall we hit the news?
Yeah.
Okay. Let's get to it.
Well, we got... only really got three pieces of news that I thought were interesting, and as we've told before, I'm limiting it to five Kickstarters, so I have five Kickstarters as well, although kind of one of them is kind of a Kickstarter in a way in the news, but we'll get to that when we get to it. First one up is, I don't know, did you guys see this, where Hasbro and Mattel have said that they've actually had talks about possibly merging?
I actually hadn't seen that until today, no.
Yeah.
No, I hadn't seen it either.
Which is kind of crazy because I guess they're the two largest toy companies, effectively. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, that'd be very bizarre because then it's just like, well, you know, where does that, you know, right now if they did merge, you can't imagine that WotC's autonomy would stay the way it is or whatever they're doing forever. You know, I don't care. Mm-hmm. You know, they are owned by Hasbro. So that'd be a little bizarre. I have a feeling it will not happen due to some sort of regulatory issues or complaints that people might have because, you know, I think the, what was it, the one that I linked to, the Vidi in it, what was this? This is from Bloomberg. One of the things that they were saying was that if this deal did go through, the only competitor that they have is Legos.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Say that.
So that's fascinating. But you know, we're such a weird, you know, even though WotC is part of Hasbro, it's, you know, and I know people hate to hear this, but it's such the role playing game market, pencil and paper role playing art, is such a small market. I mean, it's not a drop in the bucket, really. I mean,
yeah,
it disgusts me because there are people that don't get that. They don't understand that. That's why, in many ways, most of the exciting stuff that's happening, I think, in RPGs isn't from the big companies. It's from the smaller companies. It's from the Kickstarters, which is why I cover the Kickstarters. Because I remember somebody once saying they didn't want role-playing games, the role-playing game market, to become like the hobby train industry market, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's like, well, we're already there, you know, where some guy really is excited about something, so he produces something, and yeah, it's limited sets, you know? In many ways, we've kind of gone... I don't want to say backwards, but kind of backwards in a way.
Yeah.
If that makes any sense, you know. I mean, but that's, I mean, we've always kind of been that. This market's always been kind of homegrown. But I just thought that was interesting. It'd be interesting to see if that does happen. And if it does happen, what that might mean for, you know, a company, again, like, you know, the WotC division, whether they would continue as is, whether it would change the way they would have to do things. And I guess it really depends on who buys out who. Because I think Mattel was trying to, had initiated the talks with Hasbro, so I'm assuming Mattel would want to buy Hasbro.
Yeah.
So we'll see. That said, up we have, this is the one that Jimto actually told us about, which was the Werewolf Bag of Holding. And I'm not a big werewolf or World of Darkness person, but, you know, it's not bad. It's, what, $11.95 is the price point for what they're listing as the Player's Collection. And when you scroll down, it's like something like $23.16 is the threshold price for the level up price. And so that that would give you the whole additional set of stuff. And then they have two little side ones as well in the Bag of Holding for that.
Yeah, it's a great deal.
Yeah, so again, you know, and it at the time that we're recording this, there's 12 days left in the deal, so you have time. So I thought that was kind of cool. And then, of course, I couldn't include this one in our actual Kickstarter event because, well, it starts tomorrow. You know, so we're recording it today on a Tuesday evening, and it starts tomorrow. So it's not, the link is not up for it yet. But 7th Sea. John Wick actually bought the rights to his 7th Sea RPG last year, and now he's doing a Kickstarter for it. So I thought that was kind of interesting. It'll be pretty interesting to see what happens with there. So, again, don't know too many other details about it, you know, outside of some, you know, a few minor things because, well, obviously we don't know what the levels are, what's going to be included, what any stretch goals are until we actually get there. So,
have you actually played this before, the original?
Nope.
I have not either, but...
It sounds interesting.
On my Facebook feed, people are going freaking nuts over this thing.
Yeah, so I have a feeling this is going to be one of those.
I have no idea what the... Yeah.
It's going to be one of those big Kickstarters, I'm sure.
Yeah, and it says it's inspired by works of, let's say, Alexandre Dumas, The Princess Bride, and other novels and movies of high adventure.
Yep.
Things that you would come expect from Captain Blood, Three Musketeers. It does seem like it would definitely appeal to a very wide variety of RPG fans.
Yep, I agree. So that's pretty much the news per se. And so we got like five Kickstarters. Out of all five, the only one that really kind of interests me is the Aaron Alston Strike Force book.
And, yes, this is the one that definitely caught my attention.
Yeah, and for those of you who, I actually have the original Strikeforce book for Champions, which, you know, again, something like that, not very many of them were produced back then. And actually, he didn't write that one, but I have a couple other Champions supplements and adventures that were very few, and specifically the one that I have that got recalled was it Night of the Valkyries? It was the one where players end up going back in time and having to stop a bunch of people from killing Hitler. So someone decided that was very anti-Semitic, so they kind of put the kibosh. But I actually do have, or was it Wings of the Valkyries? I can't remember the actual title. It's in my collection. Unfortunately, that collection is actually in a box somewhere where I don't have access to it, but I do have that. Mm-hmm. So, but yeah, the classic Aaron Alston, where, you know, Strike Force, you know, he, in that book, he described a lot about how, especially in the back notes, he described how he was running his campaigns, the way he kept it fresh over the years. And so this is kind of an updated version of that. It is interesting, though, because I think, if memory serves me, I have to see, they are doing... The stats for the things are actually besides. It's going to be in obviously the sixth edition of Hero, but I think they're doing. I want to say they're doing Mutants and Masterminds, I think PDF the Savage Worlds.
Icons.
Yeah.
Masterminds and Savage Worlds. It says.
Yep. So, that's kind of interesting. They've reached their goal, so that's nice. They have not reached any of their stretch goals yet, which, you know, again, they still got 20 days to go. They'll probably at least reach their first stretch goal of $30,000, which will probably be color artwork.
Yeah, I'm surprised it was 30,000. I thought for sure they'd do something like 25, but
you know, I don't know.
Pretty big stretch.
No, that's only about 10 grand more than they want. Mm-hmm. So, and then of course at 40,000 they're talking about a hardcover, and at 50,000 they have a whole anthology.
Fiction anthology.
Are there add-ons or just is it just one of the levels? I mean, some of these things are really some of the levels are really expensive. And some people have bought them, you know. Yeah. Because I could have swore. You also receive all the add-ons. Are there add-ons? I don't see the add-ons.
Yeah, there's add-ons. Basically, if you add $20, it gives you the archive.
Oh, here we go. Yeah. So that, I mean, in some ways, it'd be worth it just to do it with the $20 add-on just to see that, because that would be very interesting to see all the notes and stuff that he had. That would be interesting. It'd probably be boring at a certain level.
Yeah, at a certain point.
He says it's edited and organized by the co-author of this thing, but it's just, it's fascinating. I just can't imagine it. I guess from a historical standpoint, it's interesting. But, you know, they're only for just the PDF of the book, they're asking $20.
Yeah.
So that's not bad.
Not bad at all. And then if you want to add $10 on, you can get the original 1988 edition that you have in PDF as well.
Right.
So.
You know, but yeah, so there's people are spending some money.
Yeah.
But, you know, it is funny, you know, when you even reading the original one, you know, you kind of have a real laugh at some of the character names. I'm sorry. I just do. Any science fiction, I mean, not science fiction, any superhero game, sometimes you just look at some of the character names and you're just like, okay, that's interesting, but wow, okay. But then again, you know, there's a lot of superheroes out there that just have really stupid names in, you know, in the actual comics, so who knows?
That's true. That's very true.
So anyway, like I said, very interesting. Thought that was that'd be fun for people, especially if you happen to play one of those superhero games that they have the support material for. Icons, obviously, Savage Worlds, or Mutants and Masterminds, or even Champions 6th Edition. You know, especially if you were an old Champions player and you don't play Champions anymore, but you play one of the other, obviously like Icons or the Savage Worlds or Mutants and Masterminds instead.
Yeah, I know of the ones brought up this week, that's definitely the one I'm eyeballing the most.
Yeah, the only the problem is I actually spent my money on I spent my whatever free money I had on is it Disgruntled Grunts? It was that one link that I sent out, which was basically it's Cards Against Humanity, but it has a...
Oh, yes, yeah, but with the military bent, yes. Yeah.
The only thing that they did with that one that was kind of weird is they actually ended the Kickstarter early,
mm-hmm.
which I didn't know you could do. I don't think you technically can, but they're doing it anyway. So anyway, next up we have... I bring this one up because there was just kind of a crazy thing. Rise of the Watchers, a level 1 through 20 evil Pathfinder adventure. They were only asking $100. They got 597, so I'm assuming it's only mostly... it's weird. It's like to get the whole, but it's weird. Okay, so they're limiting how they're producing, which I don't understand because it's all PDFs. But it's like, you know, right now to get all level 20 levels, you have to spend $25. Which it's one of those adventures where it's like, why would you just spend the $1 and get the first level adventure? You know, why wouldn't you know if they do levels 1 through 20, why wouldn't you be doing it all? I don't know how I feel about... I don't know. This is one of those ones where it's like... It'd be interesting to see how the adventures run. Because I've never understood how you can really run a completely evil campaign. Mainly because I... What was that?
It'd be rough.
Mainly because I don't... Yeah. At a certain level, it's like... You know... Even if players are opposed to being heroic... it's very easy to somewhat motivate them on some sort of heroic level. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. Where it's like,
at that point, you might as well just play Necessary Evil.
Yeah, but you get what I'm saying. So it's like,
yep,
it would be interesting. So I throw this out here just because it will be interesting to see if anyone actually gets this. Because I would love someone to back this, and then I'd love to see a review of it afterwards to see how well they think it actually works as an adventure. Well, you know, So next up, we have another adventure, the Lost Temple of Forgotten Evil, which is a 5th edition OSR adventure. They're almost at their $2,000 goal. And this one's 10 bucks. So, you know, again, if you're a 5th edition guy, who, you know, what's, you know, 10 bucks isn't that bad. That's, you know, I spend 10 bucks getting lunch some days. So it might be worth it. You know, mm-hmm. I think that's where a lot of this, I think that, again, that's what I like. I like to see PDFs. I like to see them between $5 and $10 because then that's an easy buy. And it's, you know, once you have the PDF, it's somewhere in your collection, you know, and if you need stuff, you print it out. And then once you're done with it, you recycle it. And I know some people are like, well, that's very wasteful. Unless, well, hey, if you can go straight from the PDF, more power to you. I normally can't. So again, I thought that was kind of interesting as a thing.
Yes.
And then this one I bring up just because I like miniatures. You know, I don't get to play with miniatures a lot, but I like miniatures and I like sets and things. But steampunk/western gaming terrain. It's these wooden thin wooden plywood buildings. You know, or actually this says MDF. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of this stuff is now laser cut. You know, because a lot of people have those laser cut cutters for this stuff. And, you know, they've reached their goal. They're only asking $2,000, and they reach more of their goal. And, you know, they have, like, obviously, you know, they have the infamous wagon, you know. They have a woodshed and an outhouse. Oh. I like the outhouse. I don't know why. That'd be
funny.
Yeah,
I like the outhouse too, yeah.
You know, and various little, you know, hitching posts and gallows. They have an actual gallow, which is kind of cool. And they have, like, you know, various little stores. Which, again, you know, kind of cool, and they have a little saloon thing. So, you know, again, a lot of these things, you know, very obviously the prices on these run variously. And, you know, if you want something, you want a lot of stuff, I think everything, all 30 options, is $500 that they have. They have a bunch of options, you know, including things like headstones and, which actually, you know, the headstones would be cool to have for a game. You know, you could easily use those for in a straight, you know, in a D&D game or something like that, or like the crypt. Some of these pieces aren't necessarily, they say steampunk/western, but some of these could easily be applied to other things, including like this set of fences. So
it's cool. I'm a little confused by the $500 level. If you actually look through and like go through the pledges, he's named them Mayor Black Maria, Top of the Prospector, and they're all shipping at different times, and they're not shipping in order of pledge, except that if you do the $10 lease one, you get shipped last. But like the $500 one, if you get everything, it says shipping times will vary. Does that mean you're going to get 7 shipments across the year? Are you going to get one big shipment at the end of the year when it's all ready to go? It's not exactly clear.
Yeah, I agree. I wonder if there's anything in the comments about that. I don't know. That is kind of interesting. I can't tell you. So, but again, I thought it was just kind of interesting, so I brought that up. And then the last one, again, another miniature related thing. Unfortunately, I don't think they're going to reach their goal. They have 43 days, but it is a neoprene gaming mat, and they have like a grass, a snow, a space, and a football field, which I'm assuming because of where they're at, it is what we in the United States call soccer, based on what it looks like, because that's what it looks like to me, some sort of volleyball / soccer.
Yeah, it does look more like a soccer.
But you know, I kind of like these just from a from a cool standpoint. Unfortunately, they're expensive. He's asking $50 for a 3x3 mat for like space, $60 for a 4x4 grass mat for, you know, for whatever, you know, whatever they're doing. But, you know, they look good. And, you know, I would have to say, if you're really into this style of games, you know, I mean, if you do a lot of miniature games and you do a lot of stuff, I don't know, in the snow or the grass or space, it might actually be worth it to look at these just to have something nice for your miniatures to be put on. And that's all I have for the Kickstarters, because we want to go into better and other things, don't we?
Indeed we do.
Anything I forgot in the news segment before we go on?
No, I think we're good.
All right, well, we did get an audio comment a little while back, and it took me a little bit to get it together, so I'm going to play the audio comment because this actually kind of goes with the topic I'm covering.
Anyway, I was calling because I'm a Linux user myself, and it looks like I'll be doing a lot less face-to-face gaming and more online. Besides Roll20, what other things do you use to help you out when you are using your Linux box to game with? Anyway, talk to you later. Thank you.
That was actually a very interesting question. Did you guys actually hear all that?
Yeah.
Okay.
I would ask you to repeat the germane part of that for.
Basically, yeah. As a rough thing, he's wanting to know. Besides Roll20, what he's a Linux user like myself, and he wanted to know what other things I use, basically for the virtual tabletop. And then when I thought about this, I was thinking, well, a lot of the stuff I use isn't necessarily Linux-specific, if that makes any sense. And so I was thinking, well, generally, what are some good things to use for the virtual tabletop when you run a game for your virtual tabletop? What really helps? And it's funny, but a lot of the things, you know, if I had to put it down, the list that I have is kind of a little weird. First thing up, honestly, some of these are, I think, to me, are kind of no-brainers, but Skype. You know, Roll20 has built-in voice. I've never gotten it to work well, but that's just me. And for a lot of people, Skype is kind of the lingua franca of voice communication. I mean, we use Skype to connect up for the show, even, you know, I mean, it's not that hard. I mean, there's a Linux version, there's a Windows version, there's a Mac version. We can all communicate. Some people have complained that Skype has a very large overhead, and that might be possible. I've known people that we play, and they use Skype through their TV when we on our virtual tabletop sessions, which seems weird, but okay, whatever works for you.
Yeah, true.
You know? So it is. It kind of is a standard thing. So Skype is a big one. And then it's funny, but in terms of tools, a lot of this tools and stuff I actually got around to was kind of came to me from the whole concept of, you know, graphics. There's a lot of graphic stuff in there, if that makes any sense.
Mm-hmm.
And so first up, I would recommend RP Tool makes a thing called Token Tool. Basically, it just creates little tokens, you know, which is nice. So you have graphics, you can create, you can use the token tool to create, you know, little tokens that you can upload. And, you know, obviously it works for several different virtual tabletops. You know, Roll20 does have the ability, you know, has a whole library of actual images that you can use. But it's nice to, you know, sometimes players, that doesn't match what your players are using. The players might provide you with an image. And it's like, hey, it's pretty nice to use their image on a token. I just find tokens easier to use than like the, I know a lot of people like the top-down view on a token, you know, where it's like you're looking at the top of their head and you're looking down, so you have like the proper facing. Yeah, usually half that time, nobody cares about that. But it's nice to have a token with a visual representation of the portrait of the character. So,
yes,
RP Tool, Token Tool, which is a Java application, makes that really easy to use. So that's like the first one for me. And to go along with that, you know, I hate to say it, Google Images is your friend. You know, DeviantArt is a big choice for that. You know, those two together, you know, you can get, you know, there's a lot of images out there that, as long as you're not trying to resell them, if you're just trying to use them for your own private games, not a bad, you know, that combined with RP with the token tool, and, you know, there you go. You got all the tokens you're ever going to need. So that's pretty nice. Of course, you know, if you have some scans or some other things, then you can make the token tool. So that's pretty. But, you know, even if you have a little more artistic bent or you need to clean up some images, I mean, I think the next biggest thing, especially for, you know, Linux, but there's Windows versions, and I think there's a Mac version, is GIMP, which is the, which is kind of the open source, I hate to say Photoshop, but it's kind of that. It's a graphic image manipulation program. That's why it's called GIMP. Mm-hmm. And it's funny because they originally used to call it, you find it as GIMP, but if you go back a long ways, everyone used to refer to it as the GIMP with the word the in front of it. So that, you know, to me, that takes care of a lot of things. And, you know, then, of course, there's the big problem of maps, you know, which, again, DeviantArt is going to really help you. And it's funny because Dice Monkey, who used to be a host on this show, actually had a post, which I'm going to link in the show links, and it talked about you don't have to be a great cartographer to have great RPG maps. And he listed some sites like the RPG Mapshare site, the Cartographers Guild, which is actually kind of interesting because there is a, it's basically a bunch of forums, and what's really nice is if you really want to get into designing maps, that's a good resource because there's a lot of people, a lot of forums, a lot of information on how to help you actually become a decent cartographic mapper. So that's a good site. And of course, he had a link to Wizards Map a Week archive. So, you know, WotC has a lot of freaking maps in their archives.
Indeed they do.
And then there's map making and games. There's a Google Plus forum for that. So there's, you know, there's some options for some information and maps and other things in there, which I agree with. And, you know, and then of course there's Dyson's site, who he generates a lot of Dyson logos. He produces a lot of maps and they're really good looking. So, you know, obviously I follow him on Facebook and stuff, so I always see some of his stuff. So that's kind of cool. And then, you know, again, sites like Pinterest, which is really weird. I would never do Pinterest, but hey, you know, there's maps on there that people do. And as we mentioned, obviously the DeviantArt site. And then there's one that I was not familiar with, Fantastic Maps, which is a bunch of free, there's some free maps there. There's some free tiles in there. So, I mean, that's kind of some interesting stuff.
Mm-hmm.
For, you know, obviously for some use. And then, actually, this is a site that I had not heard of before, but it was recommended, actually, on Roll20, which was Pyromancers. And they have this tool, which is called Dungeon Painter. And it runs in the, I mean, it's like a, I don't know, some sort of weird Java or other kind of app that actually runs in the browser. And so, you know, you can actually do a whole, you know, map that way. And, you know, it has like layers and stuff, so you can delete layers and add layers, and, you know, it's kind of, well, actually, I think it's kind of cool looking. And they have ground and floor, and they have some wall objects, and they have some other objects, and, you know, they have a line tool that you can draw and stuff. So that's kind of actually kind of cool, and they actually have a map archive as well, you know. But their map archive is kind of, it's weird. It's just, right now it has like 12 pages, and it's just, it's not like you can search for anything. You just kind of go through the page and go like, I kind of like that map. I'll use that one kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But again, I think it's kind of an interesting tool. You know, if you had to actually draw something by hand and you weren't a big cartographic person, you know, there's some options there for you. Again, all this stuff takes time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But I thought that was really kind of an interesting choice. I mean, interesting thing to do. And lastly, this is one that I've always recommended, which is you got to have a place to store information that your players can access. Because honestly, Roll20's journals and stuff, I think, are a trifle limited. And then, you know, Obsidian Portal is very popular for a lot of games. But I don't know. I looked at using Obsidian Portal when I first set up one of my first Roll20 games. And while it's not bad, I just didn't care for it. I ended up setting my own, since I run my own websites, I ended up using the Dooku Wiki, which is a PHP file-based wiki system to basically store things. And I actually, I should include that in the show notes. I think I actually have a video somewhere where I do a walkthrough about how I set up a wiki where none of the players log in. I can log in, and then on each page I have a section that only I can see that has Game Master information. So what's nice is that I can send someone a page. It could be like, I don't know, like in my space games, sometimes I'll have a page that's just planetary information. So the players can go like, oh, well, there's all the planetary information. And then I have my GM notes below it. Or, you know, I'll have notes or links to files for how to create characters or whatever. You know, whatever I need. And it's all organized in there, which to me, it saves you space on the other side it doesn't save you space, but because I don't think they count that. But, you know, to me, it's more organizable to me than some of the journal features in Roll20. I mean, the journal features in Roll20 are great, but how do I put this? Having your own dedicated wiki for it sometimes is more advantageous because you might use it for more than one game. You know, it's like, hey, this is my science fiction game. It's like I'm running one game, and then I might use the same universe and with different players and as a different game, and I still have all that same information there. I don't have to recreate it or import it or export it, and it's easy to back up. And hell, even if I decide I don't like Roll20, but I want to go to a different virtual tabletop, that information is still there, and I don't have to re-import it. So I think those are kind of really the major tools that I would kind of take a look at. And again, I mean, none of them are very, aren't really Linux specific, you know, I don't think. You know, and then there's just I don't have my link in here. That's really weird. I know I included it. Hold on. It is the, come on. Okay. donjon.bin.sh. He has a bunch of, again, this is web-based tools, but he has like a fractal world generator, fantasy name generator, stuff for AD&D, D20, Microlight 20, Pathfinder, D&D 4th edition, D&D 5th edition, some science fiction stuff. And so, I mean, this I like this site because I've used it sometimes for like, oh, when I'm in my science fiction game, I just need a world and I need like what the world looks like, you know. And it's like, I'll just generate a random world. There you go, done. So that's kind of cool, because it includes everything, and it even includes like a traveler world system generator, which is I think is kind of cool.
Yeah, some fun stuff on the site. Definitely the kind of thing that where if you're stuck or you just need, you know, something real quick, like a random name or a random, you know, dungeon or something.
Oh, yeah. I've used the random dungeon generator before. I've thrown out all the encounters, but I've used the maps.
Oh, yeah.
You know.
Yeah, I wouldn't recommend using the encounters per se, but.
Yeah, you know, and it's just, you know, again, it's just kind of funny because you're like, oh, hey, that's cool. I like that, you know, and it's like, I love how everything can just be random. I don't know why. I just love that whole thing. And, you know.
Yes. There's something fun about that.
But, yeah, I think those are the tools. I mean, is there anything? I mean, I know I didn't ask you guys to actually come up with anything, but is there anything else like that? I mean, that you could think would help somebody?
Me personally, my group is Roll20 and Skype. That's all we've ever needed.
Yeah.
If we need to go to a certain website or anything, we just kick it into Roll20 and take it over there. Roll20 is great with the, you know, you can do your own macros for certain roles. My character's got a modified athletics role, stuff like that. It takes a lot of the work out of it.
it's there and it's just easy to use.
Yeah, I think that about covers everything. Yeah, I mean, it's kind of weird, the virtual tabletops. I don't think there's actually any major additional tools that I use. But I mean, again, a lot of this stuff is stuff that you're probably either already doing. You know, again, like all these web-based tools for, you know, maps and generation of random stuff. You know, we're already using that. And of course, you know, most of us are already using PDFs, and we all have, you know, if you use whatever your PDF reader is. So, yeah, mm-hmm. I think that's mostly it. I think the only weakness I have ever seen in Roll20 is, you know, they have this whole feature where you can play like sound effects. And basically, yeah, you're limited to the SoundCloud library for that. There's no real way to, like, even if you had your own SoundCloud account, you can't link it up, which is kind of sad.
Yeah, we've never used that. If we actually need any kind of sound effect or music or anything, it's literally just played on a separate laptop at the GM's place, and it just goes through his microphone, and it sounds great.
Yeah. So.
Works easy enough.
Yep, there you go. And that's all I really have to say on that, then. We'll go on to topic two, Dread. Excellent. So take it away.
Yeah, so the other night, I had the opportunity to play in my first ever game of Dread. And after having a chance to have played in it, I have a few things to say about the system. First of all, Dread, for those of you who aren't aware already, is a horror game. Kind of in the vein of, you know, any horror RPG, really, except that it has a very unique mechanic, and that is that instead of using dice and having character sheets with statistics and all this on it, you don't really have much of a character sheet. You have more sort of a questionnaire with questions sort of designed to help the GM bring out your inner fears and whatnot a little bit better for your character, and help you understand what your character is going through a little bit better. And then, instead of using dice, you draw from a Jenga game, basically, in order to determine whether or not you succeed or fail at certain tasks.
How often do you reset the Jenga?
Well, here's the thing about the Jenga that's the interesting part, is that once somebody knocks over the Jenga tower, that's pretty much it for that player. You're pretty at that point, that player's pretty much done. And that's when you reset the Jenga tower, and everybody keeps going from there.
So
depending on where you are in the game, there's a certain number of draws you have to do from the Jenga tower after a person exits from the game.
So is there one tower for everybody?
Yes, there's one tower
for everyone.
Yeah, essentially it's when you stack the tower, you from a full tower, you take out three blocks for every player you have less than five.
Mm-hmm.
And that way, I mean, because if you're like, you know, if you're like three quarters of the way through the game and you've got a really, you know, drama-filled horror game going on, you don't want a full tower. Because everybody will be succeeding on rolls for the next 20 minutes.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Until it gets dangerous again. Yeah. So you don't want to do that.
Now, I will say that the Jenga tower is a really nice way to kind of help draw up the tension in the game. Because it does kind of add a lot to that, like, sort of feeling of, okay, if I knock the tower over, you know, on this particular task that I'm trying to accomplish, you know, my something bad is going to happen to my character. And so it does add a certain level of tension, which is kind of neat, kind of nice. But in a way, I kind of almost feel as though this is almost sort of like training wheels for a GM to learn how to, you know, effectively ratchet up tension in a gaming situation. Because it feels a little artificial, you know?
The forced tension of the tower?
Of the tower itself, yeah.
Let me say, I agree with the part about, like, it actually is a good way for a GM to learn tension, because when, I mean, you can get tension with dice too, but if you're not really sure how to, kind of do that, the tower puts it in there for you. That tension will be there. And it doesn't sound like much. You're playing a damn game of Jenga. But if you've ever seen this in practice, people flip their shit.
Oh God, yes. When we were playing, it was amazing how, like, paranoid we got. I mean, even coming close to the table, you know, everyone was like, okay, back up from the table. Nobody touched the table.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Don't put your arms on it.
But the way I've played it is the tower was actually on a different table. It wasn't around the table we were sitting around, because we had that room once was at a convention, and it made it a little bit easier. But because if you're all on around the same table with the Jenga tower, everybody starts putting their elbows down, you know, they move their chair, they bump it, and people will flip their shit again. But that point, it's not even related to a roll. It's just like, God damn it, what are you doing?
Exactly. There are a couple things, however, that I will say, was a little... I wasn't crazy about the game. And I will say that, like I said, while the Jenga Tower does definitely kind of ratchet up that tension, in a way, it's also kind of, I don't know, kind of limiting in a bit of a way, because really, once you knock that Jenga Tower over, yeah, basically, your character is out. And so if you're like me, and you're not a really great Jenga player, you might find yourself going out of a Dread game a lot earlier than maybe you intended to.
Mm-hmm. The GM has to be very strong on knowing what to make you do a pull for, as opposed to that door will just open. It's not locked. Just go through. You don't need to pull.
Right. Yeah, exactly. In the scenario that I was playing in, I ended up knocking the tower over kind of early in the game. And so it got to the point where, unfortunately, I kind of had to sit for about 2 hours waiting for everybody else to finish up after that. So in a way, that, I don't know, I was kind of a little bummed out by that, and it did kind of, it kind of rubbed me a little bit the wrong way, honestly.
Dread, it for the I've played it and I've loved it. I also know people that absolutely hated it, and we were playing at the same game.
And like I said, you know, I think obviously, you know, your mileage with Dread will vary depending on, you know, how adept you are at playing Jenga. You know, if you're a solid Jenga player, you probably will love Dread and, you know, won't have very many problems with it. But like I said, if you're more like myself and balancing and whatnot is not your forte, you know, you might find that it might be a very frustrating experience for you.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. My plan, I didn't get to do it last year or the year before, and I keep planning for it every summer, is I have a friend that has one of those adult-sized Jengas that he built. You know, that are like 3 feet tall. You put it on top of a table, and since you don't really have a character sheet, like you talked about, you answer those 10 questions or whatever they are, and then you know your character. You don't even need to go back to that sheet at all. So no, what I wanted really to don't. Do was is like some Friday, Saturday night, gets a little dark, go out in the backyard, start a fire, set up that Jenga table, start drinking a little bit, and run a game with people that don't really normally play, along with a few seasoned people. And I think it would just be an absolutely incredible time.
Oh, I think it would be an absolute hoot. Especially in that sort of scenario. You know, especially you start getting a little later on in the evening, you know, that tension starts ratcheting up with the, you know, the tower getting more and more unstable with every pull. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Oh, yeah. No, that would that would be a lot of fun.
Yeah, I'm going to make it happen.
Yeah, no, actually, we do have a friend of ours who has a set like that, one of those larger, you know, Jenga sets. You know, might be one night to get the old fire going in the backyard and set that up. You know, that might not be a bad idea, all things considered.
Yeah. And it's a good game to, well, I don't want to say a good game, but it's a decent game to bring new people in because there's no dice. You don't really have to sit around the table all that much. I mean, you could be spread across the room and just come to pull when it's your turn. And there's none of that confusing math, you know, where you have to add plus two to something.
I mean, it is really kind of a great game for beginners in that regard, because it kind of, I mean, strips out a lot of the mechanics of other games in favor of just, okay, pull from the tower and just don't knock it over.
Right. I wish they were still printing more stuff. I don't even think that company is in business anymore, or maybe the website's up, but
I don't know. That is a good question.
I've got the core book, and I found a single book called, I can see it, it's right here, hold on a second. It's called Dread Tales of Terror, Issue 1, Wastelands. And I've never found if there's an issue of two, whatever this book is. I mean, it's just a couple scenarios. It's basically all it is. And this game also, I would say, requires very little prep, because there's no real hit points. You don't have to do anything like that. It's like, you want to hit a guy? Pull a thing. Pull a block. Yes, you hit him. That's it. It's yes or no. Every time.
Yeah, actually, there is a dreadthegame.wordpress.com is still up, and it looks like you can, it has links to where you can get the PDF copy or a soft cover copy of the game, or a short 4-page reference pamphlet, which contains all the rules for free as well. So,
This book that I was just telling you about, the issue one, The Wastelands for the Tales of Terror, it also has different... if you want to specialize as a character class, it has... Well, that's a loaded phrase, specialize as a character class. Let's say you want to be a... Let me just open a random page. You want to be a radio operator. Say you're a DJ. It just lists a bunch of questions. But the questions are silly because it's like, why do you always make wisecracks even in the face of danger? What does that have to do with being a radio operator? Nothing. But it does it tells you your character, when faced with danger, will make a wisecrack. And
yes.
It's like, why do you work on radio so much? Why have you always been fascinated? How long did it take you to come to terms with being a desertion? Or with your desertion? So apparently you're a soldier who deserted, too.
It's yes.
Just, yeah, it's... So there are... It's a limited amount of questions, but they are very pointed questions.
Yes, indeed. Yep. They do very much set you up.
Yep.
All right. Yeah, I'll include that link in the show notes for that site. That's interesting.
Excellent.
Just kind of curious now what the 4-page PDF pamphlet looks like.
Now, if you ever get a chance to play this, Jeff, I would go ahead and jump at it. It's because you don't see it all that much. But if you do, get in that group.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's okay. That's where it has a link to some other links. So,
yeah.
All right. Well, is there anything else that we need to talk about in terms of that?
I think that covers it pretty well.
All right. So there's a game. I mean, the PDF. It's still only, if you're buying a new one, it's $12 and $24 for plus shipping and handling for the soft cover. So that's not that expensive.
No, not too bad at all.
Yeah. Alrighty. So we're in the part of the show where we're just going to tell you that, hey, if you have any comments on anything we talked about, or hell, like I mentioned at the beginning of the show, if you want to try to come on and co-host with us for at least an episode, you can shoot me an email at info@rbgcircus.com. You can go to our Facebook page, post something there. Obviously, you know, for the host stuff, email works best. You can go to our Google Plus page, you know, obviously post a comment on the show there. You can send us a voicemail through the SpeakPipe application, which is both on our Facebook page and our RPG Circus homepage. And of course, again, I do have stickers, and the price for the stickers is now you have to send us a topic along with your sticker request. This is to differentiate you from the people who just randomly got the strange information. I'm still getting random. Yeah. I'm still getting random people saying, "Here's my address. I want stickers." What? No. Obviously, you don't listen to the show if you don't know that you need to send a topic. Makes it really simple to differentiate.
Indeed.
But you know, I'm not getting as many as I got that first week where I had like, I think I got like 30 or 40, some odd requests, and it's like, yeah, I'm not fulfilling all those. Thank you very much. I'm sorry. So we're still doing that, and that's it for this episode. We're going to wrap this one, I think, a little early, which is okay, because I'm sure some of our listeners are like, you guys sometimes drone too long about nothing. So, any final words?
I think I'm good to go here.
All right, well, yeah, we're going to call it. And we hope everyone has enjoyed this episode, and for those of you who are playing virtual tabletops, hopefully, I don't know if my advice or any of my suggestions are good, but if you have some additional ones, I do want to hear about it, because I'm always kind of curious. Because I can't, like I said, I can't think of anything else, you know, and like I said, a lot of things I can think of are quite simply just like online resources. I think that's the big thing. I mean, that's kind of with virtual tabletops, that's kind of the thing. So, Alrighty, we will see everyone in about 2 weeks then. And
sounds good.
Hopefully, all right, sounds good. Everyone will be safe until then.
All right.
RPG Circus is released on a Creative Commons Attribution US License 3.0. For more information, please visit creativecommons.org.